Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
This is a groovy party, man.
Yeah, brother,
like, dig it.
Stop. Right on.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you.
Corey.
We got it.
between the two of us, we got this covered.
See, this is what happens, Connor, when you get a little longer tooth. Believe it or not, I do know your name.
Oh man, I'm so surprised. I feel flattered though. I feel flattered you remembered eventually.
You're on the short list, Connor.
You know the one thing for sure. Oh, and that guy in the background, I want to know who that is. It's Mondays. That's Mondays with Sandy Williams, as always. How you doing, Sandy?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well.
Earl.
Touche. <Yeah. laughs> You know, I'm we're looking at Connor, and
I was going to call you Ernie, and
Ernie Ingram.
It's not so often.
Kind of a good name.
Yeah, it is a good name.
It is.
Yeah, I don't know
third
why.
Base. He plays third base for somebody.
But I'm looking at Connor, and his hair matches his T-shirt.
Mm-hmm. Completely intentional.
Was it really?
Well, kinda. You'd be surprised like how many shirts or how much this color goes with, because you can match it like with that tan yellow.
Do you spectrum. Do your own?
Do I do my own hair?
Yeah, coloring.
No, not this one. I had a friend do it. It used to be green. I had to bleach it before I put like the green inside of it, and so the green went away, and now it's like a goldish or tan goldish green mix. I think it looks fine. I just have to wear the right stuff with it.
Oh, so are you saying you can't wear red or blue?
No, I haven't worn red in a minute. It's been a while since I've worn the color red.
You know, Sandy, you and I have been around a little while, and
I've never had green hair.
Fred. Why not?
No, I know.
Come on, Sandy.
I know. Some older people get blue hair. I think they do it inadvertently, but
well, yes, yeah. Yeah, silver, blue, and something like that. But Sandy, you know, it's commonplace now to see people with.
It's good. It's good.
Yeah,
I think you know, hair color out of the box.
Yeah.
Yep. It's good.
Your hair isn't dyed silver right now, Sandy, or.
No. What are you talking about?
Never mind.
So you didn't ask me about mine.
You see, you already told me what happened with yours.
Yeah,
it's the same thing happened with mine. Happened with Sandy.
You dyed it too, right?
I
just had to refill out. I'm renewing my passport, and the passport asks you for the hair color, and I just put down blonde. Man, and the woman, when I handed it to her, she didn't question me. So what the hell?
You know, if you live long enough, Connor, you know you're gonna wind up with hair that looks like ours.
I don't even would gray hair look. Good on me? Would I look good with? I don't.
It's not a matter of whether it would look good on us.
It does though. It does. It's silver. It's the old silverback kind of a thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, my wife was a hairstylist. Did that for a living, and she wanted my hair to be silver and not white. Oh. My hair is more white than it is silver. Huh. And for a number of years, you know, I ran away from that, right? You know, colored it and put a little hair dye in it. And
oh, for God's sake.
So you did dye it.
No, I mean, for a number of years.
There's that product that you're supposed to, that you can brush into your hair that makes it darker. And then when it rains out, you look like Rudy Giuliani.
It's running down its
color running down your forehead and the side of your face. I don't ever want to look like Rudy Giuliani. Let's just put that in.
You know, and so when I finally decided, hey, I don't, you're going to have to keep dyeing it because this is the color of your hair now. If you don't want, you know, your hair to be that color, you've got to cut it all off.
Yeah.
So, but if you're going to keep dyeing it, and then I remember reading something on the package, and it said, this hair dye can cause cancer.
Cancer, yeah.
I know. What?
Mm.
You know, Sandy, you're aware of that.
There are other reasons to think twice before you dye your hair, but that's a definite good reason.
And so I wonder if women are aware that hair color can cause cancer. It's cancer-causing agents in the hair dye, the hair color. And so you wonder, though, Sandy, I guess that's on the package. And that's why we should, they say you should always read the small print, right?
Yeah, that's why you lose your near vision when you get older, so you can just live a little happier, a little less concerned about things, because you can't read the small print.
You're making things difficult this morning, Sandy.
I am. I want you to know this is the longest conversation I've ever had about hair color.
I know. Well, we're going to talk about everything else, but
no, we should talk about it for a while.
Yeah. So how did
you get into that whole drapes question?
No. So how did you know that hair color
caused cancer?
Yeah.
Well, you know, you're right. I did know that, so maybe I have looked at a package or two, but not for myself.
Yeah. Yet, no. You know, I just, when I found that out, I'm like, so let's see if vanity is more important than longevity of life.
Well, it definitely is.
Oh, vanity is?
I'm confident that it is.
Well, what does that say about people? That vanity is more important than the longevity of your life.
It's another reason to worry about mankind.
Okay. So we're from hair color to vanity.
Well, that hair color is vanity.
I don't know if that's accurate.
Oh, golly. I guess Connor's in denial.
I mean,
Connor. If you play with your hair color, it is because you're vain, because you're worried about how you look, right?
I mean, yeah.
That's
true. I guess it's just the negative connotation with such. I mean, I decide to. It's like a balance between wanting to edit how you look, but then also, you know, be around other people and express yourself.
I get around vanity, huh?
I get compliments from people. You know, I got compliments from people.
I think edit how you look is such a terrific euphemism. That is fantastic. You've coined a phrase, I think, unless maybe I'm just been missing an action for a while, but edit how you look.
Yes.
That's not the same as vanity.
I mean, it makes people's days better. Like when you see someone and they see your hair and they like it and they're like, man, that's so cool. Like it gives them a sense of, I don't know, of joy to see that someone expresses themselves and is okay with doing that.
It's
not wholly vain, you know, it's not just a completely vain thing.
You're trying to please the rest of the world, bring them joy. I think that's good.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people, you know, go into cosmetology because they just want to help people, you know, and they want to.
Well, that's helping other people look some way. That's different, but
you know, but you have to practice somewhere, and you practice on yourself sometimes, you know.
Yeah, there you go.
So, I mean, yeah. Hey,
and you know, you've got good friends who will tell you when you make a mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah, like don't wear that again. No.
Yeah, don't do that, Connor.
Don't do that again, Connor.
I've gotten that. Yeah.
You know, Connor, actually, that's what we're here for.
So
we are your best friends.
So Connor, so the hairstyle that you wear now, back in my day they would say your hair is uncombed.
Because it's curly? Because it's curly?
No, because it's all over. Well, you know, that's what young guys wear now. It's just all over. I don't know what they call it. Savage or something like that?
I mean, it's always just been, you know, curly, I guess. I don't really know what.
No, I don't mean the texture of it, the way you wear it. I remember when I was in the schools, I was talking with some of the young guys, and the hair was all over their heads. You see it, some of the basketball players, Joe Emby and all those kind of guys.
No, it's definitely the style now. I've got grandchildren, and you can tell that they've spent a good deal of time making sure that their hair looks like they've just put their finger in the
I mean, I don't know. It's
you know, they're getting a shock. It's a little bit like Back to the Future. The guy, you know. It's,
so the kids told me back, you know, several years back. I said, man, what is that? Your head? They said it's called the Savage.
The Savage.
I think that kid was just trying to play really heavy in the trends because I've never heard that.
Well, it looks kind of, you know, kind of wild, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's more natural. I mean, I don't know.
Connor, I don't care what everyone else says. I think you look fantastic.
Thank you, Sammy. I needed that.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
People should be able to look, you know, however they want to look.
That's a backhanded sort of a compliment.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a compliment, so I'll take it.
Sandy, I'd make you a bet. By the time Connor gets your and my age, he won't be wearing that look.
I hope he does.
You do.
I probably will.
Sure he will.
Yeah.
I probably will.
We all dress and look as we did.
Maybe not this specific one.
There's going to be some young woman.
Earl, did you ever have an afro?
Absolutely.
You did. How many inches deep was it?
I was jealous of the guys who could really wear them big.
Yeah.
Mine would never grow that big.
So was it a couple of inches?
Yeah, it was more than that. It was about 4 or 5 inches.
Ooh. It was?
Yeah.
Oh, you got to do that again.
Connor, all that's going to change when some young girl curls his toes. And she'll change everything.
Whoa.
All right.
Man, if some girl's like, I don't like your hair, Connor, then that's not something I'm going
to
pursue.
So. Gotta go to a break. And it couldn't come soon enough. All right. 844-967-2789. You're tuned into the Earl English Show. We'll be right back. That was a little...
But to be yourself around me, yourself around me.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number. You know, Sandy, I want to talk about a serious, serious crisis, not just in the city of Milwaukee, in the state, but across the nation. There's never seen it this bad. America faces catastrophic teacher shortages. And I know why there's this major teacher shortage. I've been in the schools the last 12, 13 years or so. And I saw how teachers have been just mercilessly, just destroyed about the lack of commitment, their challenging, their ability.
Well, I mean, there's been this political attack, sort of the vilification of public schools, the vilification of teachers. I've got a son who's a teacher. We have Scott. He was on the radio when you were gone talking about this. But the world has made teaching a very difficult job, more difficult. It's always been a difficult job.
Is it the world or is it here in this country?
Well, no. It's here in this country. What I mean is the general world in America outside of the teaching profession has has made teaching very difficult. They've made it more difficult putting lots of paperwork into it administratively, and they've tried to make teaching subject to all kinds of rules and constraints in the classroom, but they've also just vilified teachers. And teachers are under attack when they're not in the classroom, and they're under attack generally. And I don't mean really physically, although I think in some places it's even physical. And they've always been underpaid. I mean, it's a history that goes way back to the time in the 50s and 40s and pre-World War II period when teaching was a woman's profession. It was like being a stewardess. You couldn't have children and be a teacher. You know, if you had children, you had to stop teaching. And women were underpaid generally in the workplace, and that was always exploited in the teaching environment. And teaching was viewed as a woman's job until, you know, it was in the 1950s, it was rare for a man to be a teacher. And now it's much, much more common. And teachers were frequently not the sole breadwinner in their family, or they didn't have a family. And so it made for a different income requirement. But all these things have come to a head now because, you know, if you underpay a profession, if you make their profession terribly difficult, if you make the profession subject to all kinds of expensive requirements, you got to go to teacher, got to go to college to be a teacher, graduate school to get a master's if you want to kind of move up in the world as a teacher. All of that takes money, that student debt maybe then, and so it's difficult.
You know, they've been vilified, and I just know from what I've seen with my naked eye over these last 12, 13 years or so, with teachers who are forced to be social service people before they can even educate.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look in the urban centers across the nation in the public school systems, and people are saying, well, kids aren't learning because of teachers. It is the teacher's fault that children have not learned and can't learn. And, you know, let's do this. It's the public schools that are failing the students. And that has been an ongoing edict that you hear over the last, I don't know, Sandy, how long has this been going on? So who points a student, a bright young person who's going to college for a future, and they're talking about money and all those different things now, who's saying, hey, Sandy, why don't you go and become a teacher? I mean, where is that in the list of things that people, you know, young people, career paths they want to get into?
Well, I think I was saying off the air, I'm concerned about what's happening during this period. As you move into a period of inflation, immediately people begin talking about this danger of having wages going up too rapidly, because it'll create a wage pull towards more inflation, but a wage price pull. But the fact is that there's lots of wages in our economy that need to catch up. The minimum wage workers have been getting paid well below anything that would be comparable to the consumer price index increase on wages that they should have been getting all the way along since 1950. And teachers as well. You know, teachers today, I think at least in the Wisconsin market, a teacher has to teach a long time to get $65,000 a year. And while that might sound like an adequate income, in today's world, we've done the math on this, and you have to get lots of benefits to support you. And $65,000 doesn't really get you, it barely gets you out of subsistence living. So it's not enough money to promote the notion that someone should become a teacher because it's a profession that is well-regarded or well-rewarded. So what we've left teachers as a profession to be is a profession that people who are dedicated to the concept of teaching as a self-sacrificial kind of a move. You know, in other words, I'm going to sacrifice a lot of things in my life so I can be a teacher. Well, that's not a formula that's designed to attract a very large audience of people.
Well, you know, Sandy, there was the time, and I'm not saying teachers, anybody who's dedicated their lives to becoming a teacher and being trained to do that clearly had a love for it at some point in time, and that's the trajectory that they wanted their lives to go into, and that's what they saw themselves as. And somewhere along the line, that's why they went in the direction they did. And now that they've been there and they're looking at what has transpired, what is transpiring, people who they know, their friends who didn't go into teaching profession, many of them have made a lot more money with a lot less stress. And now people who are educators are moving into different career paths and different fields.
Well, it's one thing to do something out of dedication. It's another to be vilified for doing it, right?
Yeah. We got to go to a break. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
Like a baby. Like a baby. Baby, baby, come on over. Ooh, I like it, baby. I love you, baby. Baby.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show, as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday, and my co-host is Sandy Williams. And so I wanted to talk again a little bit about what's happening with educators across this nation. Never seen it this bad. America faces catastrophic teacher shortage. Rural school districts in Texas are switching to four-day weeks this fall due to the lack of staff. Florida is asking veterans with no teaching background to enter classrooms. There it is. Arizona is allowing college students to step in and instruct children. The teacher shortage in America has hit crisis levels, and school officials everywhere are scrambling to ensure that as students return to classrooms, someone will be there to educate them.
Well, you know, the politicians have spent this time vilifying teachers. I guess in their mind, they think teaching is an easy task that anyone should be able to do. And yet, anyone who's gotten close to teachers understands that there's a lot of education they've gone through to learn all the techniques involved with teaching, and particularly the techniques necessary to reach students who are a little harder to reach. I think it's easy to teach the kid who's from first grade on is destined to college because of
right.
Because of their home environment and because of everything else about their situation. That's an easy kid to teach, but that's not where the problems lie in our system.
You know, Sandy, I was just saying, so somebody, and where they get these crazy ideas, well, they're a military veteran, that's what we'll do.
A drill sergeant. Yeah. That's what we need. More DI in the classroom.
I mean, where do they come up with these crazy, crazy ideas? Well, someone says, that's it, that's what we'll do. But, Sandy, it's what you see is, and I was saying during the break, you don't see gray-haired teachers anymore. They don't last as long as when you and I were kids, and that teacher was there. She was there all the way through retirement, Social Security, she was there.
No, I mean, teaching involves burnout. Everyone inside and outside the profession talks about teacher burnout. So that tells you something. This profession is so stressful. It's so difficult. And they need to do something about it. The size of the classroom, you know, and in environments where it's harder to teach, there need to be fewer students in the classroom. But what's happening is they're getting to be more students in the classroom because of the shortage of teachers. So, you know, if you're asked to teach 40 kids in a classroom and it's a difficult environment, that's impossible.
I've seen it. It's really ugly, right? It's not just ugly and should never be expected. It should be illegal. It should never be expected of a teacher. And can you imagine what happens to children? So you only get one shot at educating your child, Sandy, right?
Yeah.
So why isn't it a priority? I've said it for a long time in this country. We don't put the priority on education.
I mean, we need more teachers. We had a we had a shortage of teachers when we started to expand classrooms up to 30 or 40 kids, because we should have our kids are entitled to go to classes where they're in the 20 to 24 numbered range in the classroom, and in order to get more teachers, we need to have more pay. And the, all these charter schools and other schools that are kind of making it based on their ability to pay teachers less, well, they maybe are able to pay teachers less because the environment in their classroom is less stressful, less of a burnout.
Yeah, sanitized.
But in spite of that, there isn't enough money to bring more teachers into the fold. And so what we need to do is make teaching a profession that is attractive, that has lots of applicants getting into it, so that we have, once again a situation where the American business model has become dependent on underpaying the line workers. Okay, we've got lots of business models like that. The fast food industry, lots of the service industry, and the school industry. If we look at education as an industry, the education industry, particularly at the primary and secondary level, its business model is dependent on underpaying the line workers.
So, Sandy, this goes back to you always talking about a government has not planned well. Because how can you, you've got all these universities, right? Everywhere. For-profit universities, everywhere. And they need children
to be educated
enough.
Yeah, but you can't plan for this. This has to be sort of the market reaction, and it needs to be the local market reactions, because schools are run out of local marketplaces, the local school districts. And yet what we've developed is this national model that everyone bought into at the local level. And so we've had this pay structure for teachers that has for decades and decades, maybe since forever, underpaid them. But to be a teacher in small town America was to be a respected pillar of the community, and to be a teacher today is not to be viewed as a pillar of the community. So you don't get the respect, you don't get the edification personally, you get vilified, you get burnt out at work. You know, there's all these problems associated with it. Much of it has to do with what has been a long-term shortage, because we're putting teachers into situations that can't be handled without burnout.
So Sandy, you say that it can't be something that our government can plan. Our government can make some adjustments that can improve.
Well,
what happens?
There could be more. What we need is leadership, and we need people to wake up and see this. We need people to vocalize it. We need to change the value system out in our communities, so that people begin to believe that the property taxes or taxes they pay to their local school district ought to be high enough to support, you know, adequate compensation for teachers, so that we take much more pride in what occurs in our public schools and in our schools generally, because teachers in public and private schools all have the same compensation issue. The difference is that in public schools they have more stress and problems associated with what they're doing, because they're taking potluck.
Do we believe that the educational systems in our country that is now, you know, dealing globally, you know, it used to be I'm concerned about my child is going to be competing against somebody from a different school, from a different state. Now it's from all across the world. And because America is not finishing where she was used to finishing, always in the top tier of things.
In education.
Yes, in education. You look at it now, and there should be an alarm, because it's not getting better. You know, we're on a trajectory headed in the wrong direction.
Well, and in fact, if you go to the major, you know, the major highly regarded private college systems, their student makeup is increasingly becoming international students.
Yes.
And there's a reason for that. you know, those students are
they're prepared.
Very, very, very well prepared. They do very, very well on all of the different kinds of entrance requirements. And, you know, the American education system is slipping. And it's slipping primarily, I think, because we're basically we're giving it short shrift in terms of how much we compensate teachers and how many teachers we have and the size of the classrooms. Because everything becomes much more manageable if you have a classroom of 20 than it is if you have a classroom of 30 or 35 or 40.
So, you know, Sandy, once again, it's priorities in our country, right? If we made that a priority, our nation certainly could make the changes necessary.
Yes.
To make it possible. Yeah, we've got, speaking of educators and former educators, we've got one on the line, Don from Milwaukee. Hey, Don, how you doing? Thank you very much for the call.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. I've been listening to your discussion about why people don't really like to be teachers anymore. Well, I think one of the main reasons is the fear of one of my students coming to school with an AR-15 and blowing my head off. That doesn't really, to be have an occupation where it's so dangerous where you can't even teach kids. You got to be armed yourself.
Never thought about that one, Don. But
that's I know a few people that that are teachers, and you know they're telling that they quit because of that. They were studying to be teachers, and they wanted to be teachers, and they're talking about you got to arm yourself and all that. They said, well, gee, it's hard enough just teaching the kids without having to learn how to have a weapon.
So, Don, let me say this, because the amount of, you know, times that somebody has walked into a school, Sandy, and committed, you know, one of those horrible crimes, the percentage is very, very low.
And well, I don't know. Well, it's getting to the point where I hear it quite often.
I know, but so to say we need to have, you know, as teachers armed based on the sheer numbers that these.
Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying.
To be honest with you, I think when my son, who's a teacher, would probably agree with me that requiring teachers to be armed is like requiring everyone who gets on an airplane to wear a parachute.
yeah, that's a good one. I like that one. Yeah, that's a good one. I like that one.
The risks are pretty comparable,
right?
And so, you know, it's going to happen someplace, sometime, but I'm very unlikely to happen to you, kind of a thing,
right?
So I don't insist on wearing a parachute when I get on a plane.
I like that one. That's good.
But I do think that you know, this whole problem is a further reflection of the extent to which the American value system has retreated from actually worrying and caring about children. We don't have daycare provided by the government. We don't have preschool education assured by the government. We don't do a lot of things that other cultures do because they actually honestly put their children first in every regard. And if we put our children first in every regard, we would have a much greater microscope focused on the kind of education that we're making available to everyone. But instead, you know, the people who want to kind of make themselves feel better about this talk about either a voucher system or private school system, saying basically, go shop for a good school. You know, if you don't have a good school offered to you and the public school next to you, well, you can just go find another school.
But the insanity in that, Sandy, is one of the things that bothers me about our nation is you should want everybody in the nation to get the best quality education they can get. Because then it benefits the entire nation, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the other cultures, people talk about putting children first, and they aren't talking just about their own child. They're talking about children generally.
Right.
Here we only seem to be talking to people about
our own.
Your own child.
Right.
And if you don't put your own child first, you know, so what? Okay, that's your problem. That's your child's problem. That's the next generation's problem. And so we look at it in a very selfish, self-centered way. And I don't think other environments do that. I think other nations are putting children in the broadest sense first.
Well, you know, you've been to China, and you always talk about China. And they've been able to educate a group of hundreds of millions of people from scratch, well, right? I mean,
but it has everything to do with the value system that is embedded in the culture in China, and it has everything to do with the value system that's embedded in the culture in all these other countries as well. The value system ends up getting reflected in the political systems, and in particularly in the education systems, and of course, children are pushed. Are supported very hard by their family, very, very well by their families in all these places. But that has to do with the culture and the cultural values.
Okay, so we're going to do one more segment on this because I got some other ideas. Be right back. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.
God be the source, then I am the plug talker. Yeah, baby. Yeah, baby. Yeah, baby. Yeah, baby. Hey. Oh. Hey. Yeah.
Oh, all right. Yeah, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's Mondays with Sandy Williams, my co-host, and we're going to continue this last segment talking about the shortage of educators and the political situation in the United States. The political situation in the United States. Why should the political situation in the United States, Sandy, impact and affect education? Here's what I don't understand. So I watched these. There was a time when we had early childhood education in this nation. It was important. It made a difference in young children being prepared.
You're talking about four-year-old kindergarten?
Yes.
Yeah.
We used to have that.
Yes.
And it made a difference. Kids came to school. They knew their ABCs. They knew, you know, how to count. So when by the time they got to, you know, K-5, they could come in. The educator knew where they could start. Children come to school now, Sandy. I've seen them 6 years old, 7 years old. They don't know their alphabets. They can't count.
Mm-hmm.
And so what is an educator supposed to do when they've got 30 children in that classroom and you've got a percentage of them who don't know their alphabets, who can't count, and have some disciplinary troubles?
Well, you know, homeschooling has become a fairly big deal amongst the conservative movement. And it's interesting how it is that there's been this attack on schools, and I think some of it is derived from the notion that schools brainwash kids into being woke.
Yeah.
You know, that the end result of a public education or a strong education process is that people come out of it woke. You're putting quotes around that term, and woke is a term for meaning that they talk and think about things like the elites. Another quote, word, and that these elites are really presenting the world with a big problem because they're thinking and talking and worrying about things that are tearing at the fabric of American society.
Which is what education is supposed to be.
Well, education is supposed to teach people to ask the question,
yes,
why, and to create searching minds, and to make it hard to have people be indoctrinated indoctrination is a bad thing, really. You don't want to be, you know, indoctrination is not something you're trying to get children.
Well, socialism is indoctrination if you listen to
what. Sure, sure. I mean, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, there's lots of things that are indoctrination. I suppose religion can be indoctrination.
I'm saying if you're listening to those folk on.
But the fact is that I think some of this attack on education is just this visceral attack by the conservatives who are worried about that the end result of public education in particular is a bunch of people who aren't inclined to believe in the things that they believe are at the heart of the Christian American ethic. Okay, and you know, this Christian nationalism is at the heart of trying to make sure that all of America looks at things in sort of the same light, which isn't going to happen if you have strong educational systems where people ask why and come out of it with diverse views and you know.
So Sandy, you always hit the nail on the head. Texas schools hanging in God We Trust signs after new state law requiring donated signs be posted. So here we are in the public schools. They passed a law that says we can hang in God We Trust signs in the classrooms. That way of thinking and these people that you are talking about are at the root of why we are having the problems in education, because they only see it through their eyes.
Well, the attack is on public education, because private education, they think, is subject to more controls. Private education, in many cases, is parochial education.
Right.
But even if it isn't parochial education, it's much more managed and controlled education, with the curriculum being tightly controlled and books being read being tightly controlled. And it's very Orwellian. It's 1984 brought forward in time, and it's these same people who are talking about and worrying about the liberals creating a police state. You know,
right.
Because the worry now is that the far left would seize control of the government if we had Democrat majorities, and they would create a police state. I mean, this is sort of a manic, crazed view of things, but it's a little more pervasive than that, and it goes, I think, into the way people are looking at things like public education.
So, Sandy, I don't think those people think any of this through, because long term, the damage that they are doing to this nation, they don't see that. They can only see it through their eyes, and so this is the way I want to see it.
Well, I think it's because there is a view that the liberal outlook is a doctrine that has been adopted by the power structure in America, and it needs to be overcome. And what they don't realize is that what they want to replace it with is their own doctrine.
Yeah.
Okay? That and their doctrine might be much more restrictive and much more mandatory in terms of the litmus tests associated with it than the liberal elite doctrine that they're so worried about.
So they're fighting to replace the liberal elite doctrine with their own doctrine.
Yes, but I think people who live within a doctrine don't ever view themselves as living within a doctrine.
Yeah.
And I think there is, to some extent, sort of a doctrinaire aspect to the liberal movement as well. I mean, there's some litmus tests, and people ought to recognize that even if they don't perceive it as a doctrine, there are a bunch of people out there who do perceive it that way.
So, Sandy, as we get ready to move on from this, where's the answer? They're not going to come up with teachers. You can't click your heels together and turn around three times and the teachers show up. Yeah, I mean, generation.
To me, it's America's got to look itself in the mirror, and it's got to look at its value system, and it's got to realize that maybe the most fundamental value that everyone could embrace, liberals and conservatives, is let's put children first, and let's use capital C children, meaning all children,
right,
and not just small C children, meaning my kids. You know, we all should put our kids very much first, but But right up there next to them is every other child.
You know why? Because everybody lives on the planet at the same time. And you're not going to escape. You can move and live wherever it is you live, but eventually you're going to have to deal with others. And, you're not living in bubble wrap, right? I mean, all of us interconnected,
right,
are what makes the nation and the world what it is, not the other way around. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. We'll be back.